From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour, starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nnamdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. He joins us in studio. Tom, welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to say that North Korea has not objected to my appearing here today.
So, and we're very glad very glad about that, because we would be the first on the list to say, okay, we surrender. He's not appearing here today. Our guest analyst is Mike DeBonis. He's a reporter at The Washington Post. Mike joins us in studio just barely on time. Mike DeBonis, thank you for joining us.
I love a dramatic entrance, Kojo. Thank you for
having
me.
And with news, probably.
Well, now that we don't have the late Marion Barry to make dramatic entrances, we have Mike DeBonis, who makes dramatic entrances. Let's start off by talking about something DeBonis knows absolutely nothing about: Virginia. How weird is the case of Henrico County Delegate Joe Morrissey?
Well, you know, Henrico County is a nice suburb of Richmond. And I don't know what suburb Joe Morrissey's from. I mean, he's just off the charts of a character. I mean, that's why you have to have live photographs or a video of the General Assembly.
And speaking of which, there's live video stream of this broadcast. You can go to our website, kojoshow.org, and see us all right there, right now.
He's been embroiled in, you know, with this 17-year-old.
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 I want to make sure you get the age
the
right.
The bonus is up on it.
Right, and so much so that he's being forced essentially to resign, and then he announces this week that not only am I resigning, but I'm going to run for the office again in the special election. And it, you know, it reminds me of that one of the old guys when I was covering Richmond decades ago. There was an old guy from Norfolk. He said, you know, it's good to be refreshed by the voters, that you go out and be in. So if this guy goes out and he runs in a special election for the seat which he's resigned in dishonor, more power to him. Let him serve again.
And apparently he was in jail again last night for violating the terms of his work release program. He was in a location that he was not allowed to be in, and so they apparently had to take him back to jail.
Let me say, Kojo, this is one of the few Virginia stories that even a District of Columbia degenerate like myself can't help but
I wish he were from the suburb of Washington.
Yes.
This is a good one. I love the fact that you mentioned the work release provision. Yeah. I don't know how, if there's a precedent for the work release being joining the legislative session of a state as your work release. That's an unusual circumstance.
You get to make the laws and break the laws. It's perfect.
I am put in the mind of some remarks that were made, I believe, last year or the year before by a high-ranking member of the Virginia legislature, the former majority leader of the Senate, Dick Saslaw, who had made some comments about the District of Columbia being, to paraphrase, up to the hindquarters and alligators in corruption and scalawags. And I think since then, the Commonwealth of Virginia has really shown that they're at least chest up to alligators, right, if not higher.
Yes, my good friend Dick Saslaw, as they like to say, hasn't said much since the McDonald trial, which the sentence is, what's it, January 6th.
Yep.
McDonald was hauled into court again to hear his sentencing.
Yep.
10 years, maybe. I don't believe. I'm betting 3 years.
Oh, I don't know how it's going to be, but just to continue with Delegate Morrissey for a while, he is resigning in January. I don't know if they set a date for the special election that will replace
him. January 13th? Democrats have to pick the person or something?
I think January 13th is when he's resigning.
Okay, well.
He's resigning on the day that they would call the special election.
I think so, yeah, the January 13th. So you might be right, the same day.
And I'm often right.
Running for, of course, if the voters decide to return Delegate Morrissey to office, then they may be pilloried in much the same way as when the voters in the District of Columbia decided to return late Mayor Marion Barry to the mayoralty.
In the General Assembly, in all seats in the General Assembly, 140 seats, 40 in the Senate, 100 House members, are up in 2015. So I don't think they want this embarrassment hanging around. But, you know, again, if the voters, knowing full well what the issues are, elect him to serve them again, I mean, who's for us to say he can't serve?
We cannot say that. I should mention that later in the broadcast, we're expecting to be joined by Vincent Gray, the mayor of
the district. He's still giving his speech.
Of Columbia. That was a very long speech that he gave. His exit speech, his exit interview won't be that long. We're pretty sure he's going to show up, though, because you don't want people talking about you at a time when you're not able to respond. So he will be along here at some point, and you can call him and tell him what you think about his tenure as mayor. The new incoming mayor, mayor-elect Muriel Bowser, was a part of a delegation that just went to make its pitch for the 2024 Olympics coming to Washington, D.C. Apparently, the pitch was fairly well received, but the Olympic Committee has not yet made a decision. Of course, it will be considered. There is some concern in the community about the fact that the public wasn't allowed to participate in any discussion about this before it actually took place. Do you think that were there public hearings or public discussion about this before it took place, that there would even be a delegation going anyplace?
There has been, to my knowledge, Kojo, not a single public hearing. There's barely been a press conference, as I understand. I don't think there's ever been a press conference. You know, they have done some media outreach, but this is basically the enterprise of two very rich members of our region, Russ Ramsey, formerly of the Friedman Billings and Ramsey investment banking firm, a man of means, by of course, and Ted Leontis, best known these days as the proprietor of our most successful sports teams,
the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals.
And the holder of a vast fortune made through the AOL empire. And these guys want to bring the Olympics here, and they have thus far convinced the leaders of the region's largest jurisdictions, Mayor-elect Muriel Bowser, prime among them, that this is a good idea.
Well, and we can have public hearing, and this is the 2024 group is trying to get to be the United States representative to the world competition to get the 2024 games. And so we're not at some point, maybe in January, the U.S. Olympic Committee may decide on whether it be us, Boston, Los Angeles, or San Francisco. But then, even then, it will be a couple of years before, I think 2017, before the international people. So if we get to be selected, well, then there's plenty of time for public hearings and discussions and ANC group thinks and all those things. But this is a business proposal, which is not yet off the ground. If it gets off the ground, then there will be all of those discussions about what's going to happen with the land, whether RFK will become an Olympic stadium, which ultimately could be the home of the Washington football team. There's a lot to be done, but we're still in the very early stages. And the national, if you look at the national news, it doesn't look like we're going to be the nominee anyway.
Well, if you look at, I mean, you look at the Olympic bids that are currently pending, and I think, you know, there's this realization there's something wrong with this process. The process for the 2020 games has been famously messed up, so to speak. You've had major world cities entering the race, then dropping out.
Right.
We're at the point right now where they basically have to have a default pick of going to Kazakhstan because every other city who had been involved in this has decided they didn't want to do it. And what I'm afraid of seeing is that, you know, we have this group that's unaccountable to any, you know, real members of the public, throwing this out there and basically roping all of these elected officials into saying this is a good idea without, you know, sort of answering the threshold question, is it a good idea? Do we have support for this? And I feel like this could be heading down a road where, you know, the U.S. picks D.C. and then maybe it becomes clear in, you know, 2017 that maybe, this is not something that the region supports.
Well, there are two questions to be raised here. One, of course, is what is likely to be its impact on the region. That's what, I guess, hearings will be all about. And the second question is, where did Tom Sherwood get this idea of an ANC groupthink? He said there could be public hearings.
I'm a very big supporter of the ANCs. I think they ought to have even more power, but they have to address this, whether we have all kinds of things, whether it's affordable housing or infrastructure for, and we have a metro system maybe that would work on these things. There's just a lot that would go on, but if you can't have all of those detailed discussions before you're even in the game.
However, when one talks about the impact, the first thing that's going to come up is the economic impact and who will pay for this. It is my understanding that in large measure, this will be paid for by private companies.
No.
They say that now, KJ.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They always say that.
Well,
you know, private companies
end up going into my pocket.
No,
right?
No. This is big business. It's major league stuff. It shouldn't be minimized. I think the region, it would be a... we have a lot of facilities here. Northern Virginia could benefit or be affected negatively. Prince George's County. There are any number of things from Richmond to Philadelphia that could be part of an Olympic bid here. I just think I'm surprised it's gotten this far, and I would be very surprised if the D.C. region were picked.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because at this point, I would not be surprised.
Well,
least if the D.C. region is picked to be the U.S. bid.
Yeah, I still think that we're not number one on the list.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what happens with that. But you did mention ANCs, and there were at least two ANC races that apparently ended in fairly controversial ties, and apparently both of those races have been decided by drawing from a hat. I remember the days when you used to write extensively about ANCs, Mike DeBose.
Oh, ANCs that's where the real action happens, Georgia. Although I got in trouble by referring to ANCs as the mailroom of DC politics.
The mailroom of DC politics.
But now that we have a Kennedy family member as an advisory neighborhood commissioner, perhaps
there's a higher profile now of ANCs.
But no, we had two races that ended in ties.
Yes.
And they were decided yesterday Thursday at high noon by the drawing of lots. And the drawing of lots in this case, we found out thanks to the reporting of Martin Ostermuhl at WAMU and
never heard of
the Post's Miles Parks were both there. And they had a nice bag, I am told.
A tote bag.
And yes. They put in NPR nose tote bags. And they put in some envelopes, and the envelopes were drawn, and we had two new ANC.
The Board of Elections got a person unrelated to the Board of Elections from in the office to come over, and she reached in. It was a nice little story.
Yeah, but
how many
envelopes were in the bag? Two?
Well, yeah, there are two. Well, there's only two candidates, and they had each of these. And we should say one is in South in Ward 7 in Capitol View, and the other one is in Meridian Hill in Ward 1. In each of those separate contests. Each tied at 204 votes in both of those contests. And for people who don't know what the advisory neighborhood commissions are, there are like 37 commissions around the city. Each of the advisory neighborhood commissioners represent about 2,000 people. It's the lowest rung of a democratic politics. You know, you have to know who's building the three-story building on your corner as opposed to a one-story building and who's upset about that and whose dog is barking too much. It really is low-level politics. And it's really good. It's where people can really be involved in their neighborhoods.
It's the starting point for a lot of people who eventually become higher-level elected officials. I think Adrian Fenty started as an ANC.
David Catania was an ANC commissioner.
There you go.
And
Tom Sherwood.
And
Muriel Bowser, Mayor-elect Muriel Bowser.
In case you're just joining us, it's the Politics Hour. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. Mike DeBonis is our guest analyst today. He's a reporter at the Washington Post. And since we were mentioning the effect of the Olympics on the region, I guess we can now start to speak in more concrete terms about the effect that the D.C. United Stadium is going to have on the region, because it looks like it's going to happen. There's now a done deal. The council has voted on it unanimously, and I leave it up to the reporters to tell us the grisly details of how this has worked out.
Well, it's not a done deal because the real estate deals haven't been done. The city... The council members unanimously have agreed that they will move forward with a United Stadium, 25,000-seat stadium in Southwest, diagonally across South Capitol Street from the baseball ballpark. But the actual land transfers have to be done now. There has to be the Ackridge Development Company has to be paid for the land it's offering up, even though Ackridge didn't get in the end the Reeves Center at 14th and U. There's still a lot of real estate deals to be done, but at least it's legislatively a done deal.
Well, that will get worked out. If by eminent domain, if not by any other means. And I think that there's been some sort of misconceptions about that whole process, the eminent domain process. The district gets the land at the front end and they can move forward with building the stadium while they argue about the price. I don't think there's a lot of, risk involved in that point from the district's standpoint. I think the risk at this point is about, DC United now has to move forward on what they've committed to. I mean, no one has any reason not to believe that they will do that. I think building the stadium is a big, big thing, not only for their team and their fan base, but for their bottom line. It makes the franchise worth quite a bit more than it is now. But they do have to get that financing in place.
Are there guarantees? What if they start building the stadium? They've said they'll build the $150 million stadium. What happens if DC United's corporate entity starts and says, we need $40, $50 million more dollars?
Right. And that is a question I asked Mr. Levian, Jason Levian, the managing partner of DC United. And I said, is there any chance you're going to come back here and ask for more money or ask for more from the district? And he referred to it as an ongoing process. I think the door is always open for things like that. But, it's up to certainly as long as I think Phil Mendelson is chairman of the DC Council, he's not going to smile very broadly on any requests for further assistance, given that they've gone this far down this road.
And then, of course, there are expected to be community benefits from this. These haven't been worked out quite as yet. There have been proposals made, but there are going to be proposals about housing, proposals about summer youth soccer scholarships, summer youth jobs, free meeting room space. My question is always, who's going to enforce that? If after the stadium is built, the team simply doesn't do it?
Well, some of them, for example, getting the circulator to have Tommy Wells voted for the soccer deal in part. He's very upset that the streetcar is not going forward. And we ought to talk about Tommy in a moment because I think you might have news, Mike, about what's happening with Tommy Wells right now. But the circulator, we've got to provide ways for people to get there. The ballpark metro stop at 1st and M Street, it's close enough for enthusiastic fans, but it's not that close for people to walk all the time to games. And so there's going to be some rapid transit or streetcar access there. Circulator access. And then there are some public housing projects, St. James and a couple of others. They have to make sure that they're not overwhelmed economically and they're brought into the mix for jobs and other things like that. But Wells.
Tommy Wells, we didn't talk about that, but we do have, he's moving on to other things.
Been announced this day?
It has been announced.
Can you tell us what it's up? We haven't even mentioned that. It's brand new.
This never happened before in the District of Columbia, I am told, but a sitting council member will be joining the cabinet of a district mayor. Tommy Wells, announced today by Mayor-elect Muriel Bowser, will be her new director of the D.C. Department of the Environment. Tommy Wells, probably best known and beloved by district residents as the guy responsible for the fact that they have to pay 5 cents for a disposable bag.
I think
bag.
Most people are very happy to do that, and I'm happy not to see the bags everywhere. He's a lover of the Anacostia River. He paddles the Anacostia River. We'll have somebody who cares about the Anacostia River. That's good.
Happy to tell you about his boat that he actually, at least for a time, I believe, kept docked at Buzzard Point. So he can now take his boat to the soccer game on the cleaner Anacostia River that I'm sure he is going to create, and that'll be quite a legacy for Tommy if he can make good on it.
And the man who got well known for talking about making this a walkable city,
livable,
walkable city. It's been rumored for some time that he would be appointed to a cabinet position in the Bowser administration. The speculation was that he would be the head of transportation, but instead it's going to be head of the environment. He himself has been very tight-lipped about exactly what that would be. I happened to MC an occasion on which he was speaking and tried to blackmail him into saying anything by preventing him access to the podium, but he still wouldn't say anything about it.
Right. Well, you know, also he won't say anything about the expectation is that in 2016 he'll run for an at-large seat on the council again and challenge Vincent Orange.
Oh, really?
But maybe he'll find himself comfortable in the bureaucrat seat and environmental services and won't do it. But
there is something to be said about not having to get elected to collect your paycheck. But we'll see. But no, Tommy is usually very voluble and very happy to discuss and chit chat and talk off the record. But this was one subject he was not particularly eager to discuss, although he was very clearly angling for some sort of role in the Bowser administration.
Bowser this week, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, she's picked a city administrator and some other appointees. Wells didn't have the best relationship on the council. It's a very small group, and they have a lot of bitterness among all of them. It's such a small group. They fight with each other all the time personally. But, you know, he can help her understand because she herself was not intimately involved in the council while she was there, except for the things she wanted to do. I just think it's helpful that she's gotten a lot of different people to launch her administration. I'm anxious to see who else is going to be appointed. She said she would appoint a communications director. I think they need one. But we don't know yet who that is. It's not going to be you, Mike.
I could break some news.
You know who it is?
I have some sourcing on that.
Can you – well, why don't you –
okay, but who is it going to be?
I was going to tweet it first.
Well, can you? Well, tweet it while you can multitask.
Okay, well, as of last week, I was told that she is going to be, Muriel Bowser is going to be bringing in a top communications aide from the Democratic National Committee, a guy named Mike Zinn, who's a deputy to Mo Alethi, who we know.
Oh yeah.
At here in District Politics, because he did the communications for Mayor Vince Gray's campaign. So the small world.
The legitimate campaign.
The small world.
I hope
DC
Mayor
Gray
is not listening, as he won't come.
Oh yes, he will come and attack you fiercely about that. He's going to be his last opportunity.
Well, that'd
to
be
do
good.
That. I'm sure he'll
Does
be.
Someone tweet that for me because I'm.
You
do
didn't.
That. Oh wait, I guess I could do it.
Well, we've just managed to reveal it. We got an email from Jared who says, in the morning, we visited Wilson High School as our daughter is interested in becoming an incoming freshman next fall. Principal Cahill welcomed us and many others as he described his successful philosophy and approach to running the school. Later that afternoon, we were shocked to learn that he had been fired. I sent an email to Chancellor Henderson regarding the matter, and she replied, unfortunately, I am unable to discuss personnel issues publicly, but I appreciate you sharing your perspective. I don't see how deep CPS can work behind a curtain. Hopefully, incoming Mayor Bowser will utilize a hot word in politics these days. Transparency, says Jared. There's something obviously going on here because Chancellor Henderson, well, when the principal was fired, he talked about the kind of hazy requirements that all principals have to meet in terms of test scores. But then the school's chancellor said she wishes she could say everything that happened, but she can't. So it leaves.
Well, there's
the
like
impression.
Six things. It's a personnel decision. The principals do. They all get 1 year contracts essentially, and several principals each year. This one has got a lot of attention.
I guess I should mention that one of the reasons that Principal Cahill is now so well known in the city is not only because of Wilson High School, is because he came out openly as a gay man during the course of the last year.
Right, in the last year, and he was applauded for that. Mayor Gray stood by him, and so did Council Member David Catania. And it was a great I was there and did a story for Channel 4. Cahill. Is it Cahill or Cahill?
Cahill.
So he was very upset that he was dismissed. He called it arbitrary and capricious, wrote a letter to the council and maybe to the mayor, I'm not sure. But Chancellor Henderson did tell us, and we asked her about it. She said, well, I can't talk a lot about it because it's a personnel matter, but we decided that we were told later the test scores were not nearly as well and that everything had not been done well. Cahill says, well, no, he was at the school. He righted the school as it was being reconstructed. He helped keep the student body together and the faculty together. And he thought he was doing a pretty good job. And it again, was arbitrary and capricious. So if there's some, quote, real reason that we don't know, I don't know what it is. I will say that Chancellor did send out a letter to the parents of Wilson yesterday, I think, telling them that he was not fired because he was gay.
and that she's made it clear that this decision is not going to be reconsidered. Here, Mike.
No, she made very clear the day after the news broke that this was a final decision. I don't think there's anyone who can reasonably think that he was fired because he was gay or because of the way that was handled. I think that, you know, what Tom said, you know, there's concerns about test scores, there's concerns about closing the achievement gaps, and there's been longstanding concerns at Wilson about there being two Wilsons and not one Wilson, that there's a Wilson for you know, poor minority kids who are coming from across the city, and one for the wealthier kids who are right there on Ward 3. And, you know, that's a theme of unity and bringing many 8 wards together into one city that we've heard a lot about.
And we should be clear. We should be clear. Cahill, he wasn't fired. I mean, he's on the job. He will complete this year. His contract wasn't renewed. Now, that could be called firing in a general sense, but he's not out of a job now. He has said he will do his best, as some others have said when they weren't going to be continued, to do the best he can to the end of his term.
Kaya Henderson said in this letter, right, in this letter that was sent to Wilson yesterday, right, said, hey, listen, we weren't expecting Pete Cahill to go and talk about how his contract wasn't being renewed. Right. We expected him to keep his mouth shut for the rest of the semester to avoid this kind of disruption, but he decided to talk. So here we are, and we're going to have a meeting next week to discuss.
And apparently he's not going to make a much bigger deal about it. He said he's going to go off to South America and write a book. Joining us in studio now is the mayor of the District of Columbia, Vincent Gray. He is a Democrat. Mayor Gray, thank you so much for joining us, presumably for the last time during your tenure.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here, sitting right between Tom Sherwood and Mike DeBonis. There's something symbolic about that.
Yes, there is. And we'll probably
a matched pair of something. I'm
we'll
not
probably
sure.
Get to, before this is over, take the gloves off, please. we're going to issue you a really major challenge here, because in the wake of the state of the speech that you gave about your tenure as mayor, I know it's going to be a real challenge for you to tell us what you think you have achieved during the past 4 years in 1 minute or less.
1 minute or less, impossible. I'd have to talk mighty fast to be able to do that justice.
All right, 90 seconds.
Yeah, 90. Oh, no, thank you. You know, I look at this from the perspective of what it is I set out to do. You know, you look at the One City Plan we talked about, restoring fiscal stability to the city. We talked about continuing education reform, especially something that I've championed, and that is early childhood education, getting people back to work, redefining the economy, refashioning the economy, stimulating the economy in the District of Columbia, and bringing it to all areas of the city, continuing to make us a safe city, and fighting as hard as we can for self-determination, which is a very difficult proposition.
800-433-8850 is the number to call. Let the record show that the mayor apparently was able to do this in the 90 seconds that he was apportioned. 800-433-8850. If you have questions or comments for Mayor Vincent Gray, you can also send us an email to kojo@wamu.org. Watch our live video stream at our website, kojoshow.org. There was a part of your prepared remarks that you chose not to include when you made the speech about people feeling they had to make a choice, a false choice between progress and inclusion. Why did you decide to take that out?
I just decided to make this as positive as we could. It's a fact that I felt people were, you know, it's one of the reasons why people urged me so much to run, because they felt like they were being put in impossible situations. But I decided to really focus as much as I could on the things that we had accomplished. I think we've accomplished a great deal. We've even put it together in a book now.
72 pages.
That's right. You've read every page, haven't you, Tom?
I've given it all the attention it deserves.
Yeah. That's a very cynical comment.
I would say something nice in a moment to balance it out.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't want you to deviate from what you've done normally, Tom.
It was normal course of action.
It is a 72-page booklet, but I would, you know, as a reporter who's covered the entire campaign, I covered the campaign that you defeated Adrian Fenty, and there were those horrific ads that, you know, you were going to bring back the worst of the government from the 80s and, mm-hmm. and the corruption and the favoritism and cronyism and all of that. And I would say, as a reporter, having covered you, I mean, you've done this, your booklet says it all, but You have been. Across the city, people tell me, whether they liked you or not, whether they wanted you to be the mayor, that you have done a very good job in maintaining the reins of government and expanding opportunities in a variety of areas. And some of them, of course, are, and we'll get to it in a moment, I'm sure, that they're heartsick that this federal investigation of your campaign for 2010 has gone on, that you had that problem at the start with nepotism of your appointees appointing their relatives, which you got over that, but that there are a lot of things have gone well since Mayor Tony Williams and Adrian Finty and you, that the city has been on the city is doing quite well.
I think that's true. I'm a native Washingtonian, obviously been here all my life, and
not yet.
I take great pride in our city, and I take umbrage when people criticize the city. Those things that were legitimate, I try to take them to heart, and wherever I was, I tried to do something about correcting those. And then having a chance to be able to serve in this capacity for 4 years and then chairman of the council 4 years before that, it really gave me an opportunity to demonstrate what I think we can be as a city, and that's what we've worked on. I'm proud to talk about our city at this stage, and I would hope those who live in the city are proud of it. Our population is growing, 660,000 at this stage, 1,200 people being added a month. And you talk to people all across the city at this stage, I think there is enormous pride in the District of Columbia. Frankly, one of the moments for me that in the recent past was when we went on the Hill to testify for the first time, certainly for me, and I think maybe in the history, before the Senate on statehood for the District of Columbia. Oftentimes, those discussions, especially within the Congress, have focused on the negative aspects of what those would perceive as the negative aspects of the city. And really, there was virtually none of that. Senator Carper was very commendatory of the city. Even Senator Coburn, who certainly obviously has his reservations about the district being a state, maybe for political reasons, it wasn't even that difficult with him. And what that said to me was, I think people have recognized that this city is moving in the right direction, and those kind of comments just have no place anymore.
Mike?
Well, Mr. Reed, you mentioned the city is moving in the right direction. That's, we see that in the polls. We see that in our city hall. We look at how this last campaign played out, and you're sitting here today. You brought with you your one city progress report, your final report of your tenure. I want to ask you a question, because you ran as chairman on a one city platform. One city was the foundation of your mayoral campaign and your mayoral administration. And we listened to Muriel Bowser run her campaign, and her mantra is all eight wards. To me, I hear two sides of the same coin. What is your reaction when you hear Muriel Bowser say that? Is that not a vindication of your governing style?
I think so. And I think also, and I still even today, Mike, I have to explain to people what I've meant by one city. There were those who thought, and lots of people in the early days, what I meant is that everybody, irrespective of where they live, would get along extremely well with one another, which is ridiculous. That just isn't going to happen. What I meant was that you shouldn't be disadvantaged by your geography, and we know that that has happened in the District of Columbia. The further west you live in the city, the more advantaged you appear to be, and the further east you live in the city, which I happen to live in Ward 7, the more disadvantaged. My goal with One City was to really create opportunities for people to be advantaged no matter where they live. That's why it's wonderful to be able to say we have a brand new Ballou High School, which I think is the finest physical plant for a high school in the District of Columbia. And I think it's going to engender even more pride among the Ballou students today, the Ballou alumni. We've got Skyland Shopping Center, which has that's been discussed for 30 years. The demolition now is 90% complete. There's so many things that we've been able to do on the east end of the city that I think bespeak what I was trying to say with One City, and that is no matter where you live, you should have an opportunity.
You should be included. Well, you mentioned Skyland, and I think it's important because, you know, I've bugged you about this for the last year, is that Walmart has come into the city after a big fight over the how much it would pay, where it would go. You, and when you invited Walmart in as part of this, you said, yes, but we also need retail development in Southeast Washington. You specifically got them to agree to put a store at Skyland. Yet, I think it's Rappaport, the developer, is still there. To my knowledge, unless it's happened recently, there is no signed agreement that Walmart will come. And I've said it before, as a citizen of the city and as a reporter, I'm somewhat concerned that when you're out of office January 2nd at high noon, Walmart will say, oh, well, we tried to go to Skyland, but we couldn't do it, couldn't reach the agreement. And we'll have Walmarts on Georgia Avenue, and we'll have them downtown and another out in Northeast. But we won't have one at Skyland where it is desperately needed. Why haven't they signed the agreement? I know there's been discussion about the wall that needs to be built and some other things. But can you get this done before you leave office?
I think there's a good chance we could.
Just beat them over the head with something? A cheap yardstick that you bought there or something?
I can't say it with certainty, Tom, obviously, but... we know, and I follow this literally on a daily basis. We've been working with Rappaport. We've been working with William C. Smith. There are many attorneys who are involved in this. There's Rappaport's attorneys. There's Walmart's attorneys. There are other attorneys who are involved in this.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Mayor, but the Safeway across the street, is that still an issue here? Is that something
the issue is a single one at this point. There is a covenant that was put in place many years ago by Safeway. A lot of people don't realize what was the AutoZone used to be a Safeway. And there was a covenant that was imposed on an area there that essentially says that this can't be used by someone else who was doing the same thing that Safeway does.
And that's the last.
That is the last thing.
And Walmart has a huge grocery operation.
Absolutely. And actually where the covenant is not on the footprint of where the building will be. So it's actually where the parking would be.
Okay, well, so not to get bogged down, and so it's just a matter of technical legal details, not any will on the part of Walmart to go there.
I haven't seen any expression.
Right.
Yeah, I hope I'm right, too. I can't say with certainty. I will say this also, and that is the issue now involving Walmart, they say themselves, comes down to the covenant. There was legislation that was passed, you all may have followed this, that I signed back in October, that actually forbids these kind of covenants. It wasn't done specifically for Walmart. It was done actually for a Safeway on MacArthur Boulevard. But it covers the same issue. And we've tried to make the case that we think the issue was solved by virtue of that legislation, which is now in place. Walmart wants a greater certainty, and that is a willingness on the part of the city to remove this covenant in whatever way it's required, you know, to get it removed, and we've indicated a willingness to do that.
Now, a long-term and a short-term question about the alleged shadow campaign, which has been a shadow in a lot of ways over your administration. One, were there any long-term goals that you had that you think were adversely affected because of the U.S. attorney's prosecution of people who are involved?
Well, his goal of getting reelected was one of the
that was the one I was going to ask next. If you think that had he not moved forward with his case against Jeffrey Thompson, do you think he would have won the primary?
Well, the polls suggested I would have. I was well up in the polls. So I think there's, other than just my opinion on this, I think there's, you know, an indication that we would have gotten reelected. But it is what it is at this stage. As far as my performance is concerned, it hasn't deterred me one day. I came to do something on behalf of the city. You know, a lot of people don't realize, I think, that the difference in salary between the council chair and the mayor is $10,000 a year. Now, why would anybody move, you know, from one job to the other? Because I was in the council. I'm pretty certain I could have gotten reelected.
This was not a lifestyle upgrade for you?
Not exactly, no. Was that about $200 a week? That's before taxes and all the other stuff that comes out. So I did this at the urging of so many people, and I did it because I love the District of Columbia. And frankly, even though I obviously haven't liked, you know, what has happened with this situation, I have done my job as best I could day in and day out. And I really appreciate the people who worked with me. We've had some wonderfully talented people who worked in this administration, and they have worked very hard to be able to move this city forward.
Let me ask, just to close out our discussion of the investigation.
He decides when we close out on this discussion of the investigation.
I'm with him, okay?
Trying to be polite.
You
don't want to end the show.
Tom, as we all know from every press conference,
and I don't
want to
talk about this for this entire half hour either. We've talked about it ad nauseum.
As we know from every mayoral press conference, Tom Sherwood always gets the last question. But
he gets the first one oftentimes, too.
You know, we still haven't seen the end of this investigation. You know, January 2nd, you're going to be out of office. Perhaps the U.S. attorney might think, okay, at this point, there's no reason to bring charges against you. There's no reason to say this investigation is over. Is there some part of you that wants there to be some final
closure,
a chance to, even if it means them charging you and you going to court and defending your name? If there's a choice between them just dropping this and them charging you and you clearing your name in a court of law, What's the better option?
Well, I don't think any of those are better options, you know, to say, yeah, charge me so I can get in court and prove that I didn't do this. Who would want to go through that, Mike? I don't want to go through that. I have maintained all along for however long this has gone on. You know, it's incredible. This has gone on from the beginning of this administration until the end of it. And I have not changed my story from the very beginning of it. And I have no intentions of changing it. I would hope that they would realize that, what I'm saying is factual.
Seriously. If they went through all of this and it got to the point, and to this point, you're out of office, you lost because you say of all of this investigation, and they don't charge you, what is that? What is that? What word would you use to describe that?
Political?
Pardon?
Political? Would you say it was political?
I'm not going to characterize it at all at this stage. Obviously, one, I wish this investigation, one, would be over with. I wish it had been over with before 9 months ago, you know, when the primary was conducted. And obviously, I want somebody to stand up and say I'm vindicated.
Well, Mr. Mayor, Bob Bennett,
are you all going to spend the entire half hour talking about this?
We're doing it now. In the middle of your appearance. We started with the good stuff. We're going to do this, and then we're going to go back to the good stuff for you to end the program. unless Kojo wants to go off the
rails. No, we have callers.
Okay, all right. Bob Bennett, your attorney, gave you good advice. He said, let me handle the legal stuff. You go be the best mayor you can be, and that's what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I don't think anybody can doubt that. The problem has been, we do keep asking about this because, in part, with your attorney, you have not discussed what you did do during the campaign. You've said you're not going to discuss it. My lawyer says not to. And you said you haven't done anything wrong and that Jeffrey Thompson, the principal money bags for the shadow campaign, was lying about your enrollment, your involvement. But you haven't been able to talk about, maybe when you leave office, will you be more open to discussing what you did? I mean, because if you didn't know anything about what was happening, then some of your best lifelong friends did you a horrible service. They undermined you. They undermined your credibility, your reputation, your long-term ability to serve the city. So I want to hear you talk about that, whether you get charged or not. Will we ever hear that?
I have no idea. I've said what I think needed to be said, Tom. You know what's interesting to me, too, is it appears that, now you read the same articles I did. I don't know. You may have been part of writing the article, that apparently the same situation happened with Hillary Clinton. Anybody remember that?
Yep, I do.
I'm talking about the same situation. But the difference was that in her campaign, the shadow campaign wasn't run in tandem and along with and next door in the office of your campaign.
Well, I'm glad that you can make those distinctions. And it's amazing to me that you all haven't pursued any of that, okay?
And the prosecutors they haven't said anything, but there's been no indication that Hillary Clinton had the slightest idea that in hundreds of millions of dollars.
And where's the indication of that did?
Well, because...
Because somebody said it?
No, because of what Jeffrey Thompson pleaded guilty to, what Jeannie Clark Harris pleaded guilty to, what Vernon Hawkins has pleaded guilty to. I mean, there's quite an inference of a shadow around you.
Inference is very different than
we've
been into this for half of the show.
It has not been five minutes out of 20. It's been one quarter.
The answer to the question is that after the mayor leaves office, you don't think there's any more to address than you have before. before.
I've tried to address it as effectively as I can.
Well, I don't think the legal stuff is over, whether he leaves
or not. Here is Walter.
May not be.
Okay.
Walter in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, please don your headphones so you can all
hear. He doesn't want to talk about the scandal, does he?
What Walter has to say. No, Walter wants to move the conversation literally ahead. Walter, your turn.
Yes, sir. First, Sherwood, leave people alone. This is Kodo Nami, not Sherwood Show. And I respect
well,
you.
He's the star of the
just
show.
Just give me a little more time.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your service to the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I would like to have you understand, we last met down at the Mamie Johnson Rosedale Field dedication. I thank you for that, sir. And there have been good things from your administration and from you. I just want to ask you to continue to work with the city politically as an elder now, as a statesman, to move us forward. We might not get statehood.
I thought you had a question, Walter.
We will stop being disrespected.
Well, what's that? I'll ask the question Walter wants to ask, which is what's next?
That's
what,
right.
What
that's,
is
that
next,
was Walter's
Mr.
question.
Mr.
What are you going
what
to do?
What is next?
Where do you go from here?
Do they bring both of you on the show to ask the same question? I mean, that's, you know, it feels like
stereo.
Stereo, yeah.
It is stereo.
I haven't really made up my mind what I'm going to do. I've spent virtually no time thinking about that. My time has frankly been spent trying to make sure that we finish all the things that we wanted to finish, you know, in terms of the agenda that we had.
Do you have a pension? Yeah. Are you get having served in the government for the council and the chairmanship and the mayor, do you got some stipend or a pension?
Have you looked into that yet? Everybody is. Anybody who works for the government for 5 years or more has a right to, retirement, yeah.
Okay. But you're not retiring. You're going to find something to do.
Of course. Retiring, to me, kind of is doing nothing.
Right.
Or doing, you know, stuff that's of a leisurely nature. That's just not me. I've told people that going to work is like a vacation to me, which sounds odd, but it happens to be true.
Mm-hmm.
That does sound odd.
We got a tweet from Joe P. who says, thank the mayor for getting the D.C. United Stadium deal done. Ask him to please remove the speed cameras. Thank you.
Sounds like a suburban caller to me.
Why was the stadium such an important priority this past year? It took a lot of time up in your final year in office to make this happen.
Because I wanted to see that the team stayed here. I didn't want to be in a situation where I left and had virtually no certainty about whether the soccer team would be able to be in the District of Columbia. The team at one point threatened to go to Prince George's County. Then they were going to go to Baltimore. I think people have to recognize that soccer is the future. Soccer is a sport that is growing. It, you know, when you go to Europe or you go to South America, it is at a fever pitch in terms of that. And frankly, we see more of our children now playing soccer. People are diverting their kids away from football to play soccer. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. And I don't want to see the District of Columbia to be in a position where you get this burgeoning, blossoming, you know, booming soccer experience around the nation, and then the District of Columbia is left out because we don't have a team here.
I'll ask you the question I put to everyone else. Who enforces the community benefits deal in this package?
The community, it would be the government. It would be the administration, and it would be the council to exercise oversight on it. And advisory neighborhood commissions also would play a role in that, which they have in the past.
Do you still want the Washington football team to come back into town on a favorable deal to the city, obviously, where the taxpayers wouldn't foot the bill like it did with the ballpark? Do you then? Jack Evans has said from Ward 2, the council member, he wants all the pro teams in the city playing with the name Washington in the city. Do you think that there's still a place for the Washington football team at RFK, whether we get the Olympics or not?
Well, yes. I would love to see the team back here. You know, if we had more time, I'd give you my dissertation on what I think is wrong. And it doesn't start with the team on the field. It starts in a number of other places, in my opinion. But, yes, irrespective of how bad the team is playing at this stage, they are the Washington football team, and they should play in Washington.
Here's Corbett in Washington, D.C. Corbett, your turn.
Hi, Kodo. Hi, Mayor Gray. I have a copy of the Sustainable D.C. Plan, the mayor's plan for a green city by 2035.
32.
And every word of this plan points to saving green space, not turning like the McMillan
Central
site into a mass of...
Yesterday we had a conversation on development. McMillan Reservoir came up. I think we got to move on that one. But I suspect that what our caller really ultimately wanted to get to was about water main breaks. That's why what he said he called about water main breaks in Southeast. Are we building a new city on failed infrastructure of the old city?
Yeah, can I make one comment about where I think he was going?
Yes.
About green spaces.
Yes.
First of all, development is booming in the city. But one of the things that I did nearby to where he's talking about was a year before last, I put $50 million into preserving green spaces in NoMa, which is, you know, Florida Avenue, First Street, those North Capitol down in those areas, to make sure that we continue to have green spaces in the city. We've got to have a balance of both, and that is development. And at the same time, we've got to have the green spaces that preserve the parks and park areas for people in the city.
And do you think, without getting into the weeds on McMillan, which is up off of North Capitol Street, do you think it reaches a balance of green space, family space, affordable housing?
I think it does, but I think we'll continue to have disagreement about that, Tom. There are people who have various views. Those views range anywhere from people who don't really care at all about the green space to those who believe all of it should be green space. So that's what decision-making is about in these jobs. You know, anybody that wants to be just simply popular and make everybody happy, these are the wrong jobs for them.
Mr. Mayor,
we only have about a minute left.
Well, we talked about things that you want to get done before the end of your term. We talked about Skyland. Let's talk about another thing that's been in the pipeline for some time, and that's the streetcar. Is there a chance that you're going to cut the ribbon on a streetcar where people are going to be able to ride before January 2nd?
We're going to do our best to make that happen. You know, we're doing the testing. We have a state safety office, which is in place, that is responsible for doing the safety checks and then giving that data to the Federal Transportation Administration at the federal level. I'd say there's still a chance, and there's a chance that it won't happen either. So I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, yes, definitely it will happen, but we're trying to work.
Who makes the final call on that?
On what?
On whether the streetcar runs or not.
Well, the people who do the safety tests.
Okay.
If the safety tests are passed, then we think we will.
We're out of time. Vincent Gray is mayor of the District of Columbia. This is the last time he will be visiting us as mayor. Mr. Mayor, thank you for all of your past visits. Thank you for all of your public service. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Kojo.
And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Mike DeBonis is our guest analyst today. He's a reporter at the Washington Post, getting ready to pursue whoever the next mayor happens to be, Muriel Bowser, as is Tom Sherwood. He's our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. Always a pleasure.
Have a good week.
Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi. Coming up Monday on the Kojo Nandi Show, the Christmas truce. In the midst of World War I's bloody fighting, bitter enemies France and Germany paused to celebrate the holiday. Then it won the golden age of board games. Even in a tech-saturated world, classic games and some with new twists still animate family gatherings. The Kojo Nandi Show, noon till 2 Monday on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at kojoshow.org.
Metro Connection is next year on Thanks for listening to the Kojo Nandi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.